I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Cory Booker's lead in the U.S. race, in the race for the U.S. Senate in New Jersey has shrunk in recent weeks, but he still holds a sizable advantage over Steve Lonergan. The special election to replace the late Senator Frank Lautenberg will be held on October 16th. Then a few weeks later, New Jersey voters will cast their ballot for governor. Republican Chris Christie, who is still popular in the blue state, is being challenged by State Senator Barbara Buono. We want to know if you are paying attention to this election and who you will be voting for. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can also email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Well, we want to check in on the political happenings in New Jersey, and we've asked Bridget Harrison to join us. She's a professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Bridget, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Always a pleasure, Marty.
And Tom Moran joins us as well, editorial page editor and political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. And Tom, nice to have you back with us as well.
Thanks, Marty.
Tom, let me begin with you. It's about 2 weeks before this Senate election in New Jersey. Are New Jersey voters engaged?
I think partially engaged. They're paying more attention to that one, it seems to me, than the governor's race. I mean, what really hurt Booker lately, and I think what caused his poll, what was it, like 30 or 40 points at the beginning? Now it's 13 or so.
Yep.
There was a murder spree in Newark 10 days in a row, big headlines about yet another murder in Newark, and that made it seem like he's presiding over a big mess down here. And the other thing that Booker's people tell me is when they poll, people don't know Lonergan's positions on the issues. They think of him as a traditional Republican, and he's really not. He's more, you know, his idol is Ted Cruz. He's really way out on the right side. So they say they'll fix it, you know, that they're going to do an ad campaign to make – and that started the real negative shots on Lonergan. Negative in the sense of policy, not personal.
Well, and calling him extreme, too extreme for New Jersey.
Right.
Bridget, do you want to weigh in on this? How do you see engagement in New Jersey?
Well, I think that people – I agree with Tom. I think that so many people are engaged in politics right now, it's really difficult to avoid it if you live in the Garden State. But I concur that, you know, the race that people are talking about, the race that people are energized and excited about is this gubernatorial race. You know, the timing, of course, that was a choice by Governor Christie to have these elections so close has really meant that the gubernatorial campaign has overshadowed the Lonergan-Booker Senate race.
And why did Governor Christie want to separate these two elections, Bridget?
Well, I think that it's quite clear that, first off, his vote get will be a lot larger when he's at the top of the ticket. And the other thing is that I don't think that he wanted to mobilize that passionate support that will come from a strong Democratic candidate. You know, many national Republicans were furious with the governor because he could have done two things. He could have put these elections simultaneously so that whoever was running as a Republican for the U.S. Senate would have had a better chance benefiting from his party organization and support, or he could have appointed someone to serve for the remainder of Senator Lautenberg's term. He chose not to do that, essentially handing this seat to the Democrats. And, you know, I think that this will come back to haunt him should he choose to throw his hat in the ring in 2016.
Let me go back to you, Tom, and I do want to talk about the governor's race, clearly if that's what New Jersey voters are interested in. But I think it is interesting to compare Cory Booker and Steve Lonergan, and it seems to me you couldn't have a more different two candidates.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, let me run through a little bit of a list of Lonergan's positions on issues. As far as tactics goes, he's an absolutist. You know, Ted Cruz, he backs the shutdown. He says, I will never vote to increase the debt limit. As far as his actual positions on the issues, things like he's against any minimum wage. He's against a progressive tax system, says it should be a flat tax, which would benefit the wealthy. He wants to eliminate the Department of Education, outlaw gay marriage, end abortion rights. He says climate change is a hoax. He worked with the Koch brothers against climate change full-time for the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, he's out of step with New Jersey, clearly, on the issues.
But are you saying that New Jersey voters don't know this about Lonergan?
I don't think they do, because that's what Booker's people have calculated on this, why that gap has changed. And that makes sense to me, because I think if people realize, you know, if you look at the polls of people in New Jersey's views on each of those issues I listed, they're overwhelmingly against Lonergan's position. So I don't see how he's really going to wind up with mid-40s% of the vote.
Going back to you, Bridget, and one of the things that Cory Booker has been accused of is being a show horse. How do you see Cory Booker and his bid for the U.S. Senate?
Well, I think that there is no denying that there is an element of a show horse. I mean, I think that you can be a show horse and still be an effective leader, but the reality is that Cory Booker has created a brand for himself. It is a brand that is a lot of style. He has cultivated this style and marketed this product that is Cory Booker, primarily using social media, but also using television and other venues to kind of create this persona. And I think, you know, I agree with Tom that many people don't realize that Lonergan is out of step with their own positions, but I think that this perception that they had of Cory Booker was really based in a very superficial marketing campaign. And then as they've gotten to know Booker, and with the increase in the murders in Newark and also some of the financial dealings that were revealed about Booker, the polls started to switch because people were saying, well, anyone but Booker, particularly those swing voters. The Booker campaign has done very little to this point to inform voters about Lonergan's positions on these issues.
But do you think, Tom, is it all style and little substance when it comes to Cory Booker?
Well, it's both. I mean, I think, you know, he is definitely a showboat, and he's got, what, a million followers on Twitter, and he's constantly tweeting, and he's spent 10 days in California raising money during the heat of this campaign. He's pretty much constantly traveling. He's out. We did a careful look at it and found he's out of the city roughly 1 out of 4 days.
Wow.
You know, he raises a lot of money on those things. We calculated it also, and it came out to $600,000 average per trip, you know, that he's raising from philanthropy that's made a big difference in Newark. But, yeah, he likes the whole high-profile thing for sure. He's not a kind of guy who stays, you know, in the trenches, and he doesn't have real political control at the of Newark. When he leaves, there's not going to be much of a trace of him left behind. But I think he, you know, his record, he has some pretty tangible accomplishments. You know, crime when he first got in dropped dramatically. Now it's crept back up, so I wouldn't call that a great accomplishment. But the economic activity, you know, 30% of new building in New Jersey is now happening in Essex, and most of that's in Newark. There's corporate headquarters. There's charter schools and apartment complexes. He cut the city workforce by 25%. So I think he can stand up to somebody, a conservative, and say, you know, who can match that record of austerity? You know, there's been improvements in park, affordable housing, a lot of that because of the philanthropy he's done. So, you know, he has some concrete accomplishments. I think Newark is better off now than before, but he is a showboat.
But it is interesting, Bridget. I don't think New Jersey has had a Republican U.S. senator in, what, more than 40 years?
Exactly. And, I mean, I think that we have managed to elect these Republicans like Chris Christie, like Christine Todd Whitman, like Tom Kaine. But the advantage of being a Republican executive in the state of New Jersey or even a state legislator is that you can take that moderate position and essentially be a New Jersey Republican. When you're in that federal government, when you're in the federal legislature, there is enormous pressure on you to toe the party line, and obviously the Republican Party nationally is a bit more conservative than New Jersey voters. And these are, remember, U.S. Senate candidates who are running statewide, so it isn't like a Scott Garrett up in the 5th Congressional District who's very conservative, has a very conservative core. It's very tough for a conservative Republican to win statewide office in the state of New Jersey. It's even harder to do so at the federal level.
Well, I wanted to, Tom Moran, because I know that Rick Perry, governor of Texas, came in to campaign for Lonergan. Sarah Palin has lined up behind Lonergan. Would that help him in New Jersey?
No, not at all.
Like, no thank you?
Heard him. On the other hand, the only hope that Lonergan has, I think, is that nobody shows up except the real diehards. And if it's a competition of diehards on one side versus the other, that's probably his best scenario. You know, I guess bringing in Rick Perry and Sarah Palin might motivate the diehards, but it's going to turn off most New Jersey voters.
So is it a fait accompli, Bridget?
Well, I agree. I think, though, that the one value of a Palin endorsement or a Perry endorsement is that it may raise some money from outside the state, and Lonergan is trailing in the fundraising campaign. He needs to bolster those numbers to get his message out to voters, so that may help him. But the reality is that these endorsements, you know, definitely hurt him. But as Tom says, this is an election where every voter who is going to the polls is going to vote for one person and only one person. So in the true believer category, I would agree that Lonergan has a stronger base of true believers than Cory Booker does at this point.
And now, the late Senator Lautenberg had a frosty relationship with Cory Booker, Tom Moran.
Yeah, you know, all ego nonsense from my point of view. There's no substance to it. I mean, Lautenberg wanted nobody to suggest that they would try to succeed him because he kept saying, I might run again.
Right.
When he was in, you know, he would have been 90-something. Bridget, maybe you know the exact age, but clearly too old. And he was insulted that Booker stood up and said, look, I'm interested in running for Lautenberg's seat.
So what?
And a lot of Democratic, the professional Democrats, the consultants and the office holders, were also very offended by that. But, you know, for the regular person, I mean, give me a break. This is all just big senator and mayor ego stuff.
Well, here's a really shallow question, because I know there were questions about, is Cory Booker gay? And then we find out he's been flirting with a stripper online. I almost hate to say that, Tom, but, you know, did this have any traction?
I doubt it has much traction, but it sort of reinforces this idea of Booker as this floozy who's flying out to California all the time. You know, not a real Jersey guy who's in the trenches working for the middle class.
And Bridget, I'm curious about when it comes to, and we haven't really talked issues here, and when it comes to issues for New Jersey voters and when they think about the U.S. Senate, is it the shutdown? Is it education? Is it Sandy? I mean, what are the issues you think that are energizing New Jersey voters, if anyone is energized?
Well, I think that right now, obviously, the hot button issue is the shutdown. And I think on this issue, we saw, you know, Tom listed at the beginning of the hour some of the divergent opinions on this issue. The opinions of these two candidates are diametrically opposed. So you see Booker kind of urging some kind of compromise and, you know, that this is an awful travesty and government shouldn't be shut down. Importantly, you also see Christie weighing in and saying, you know, that this is not a good thing and that this needs to be fixed. And then you have Lonergan saying, thankfully, they're holding the line.
Mm.
They're meaning that Tea Party caucus within the Republican Party in Congress. And I think that, you know, many New Jerseyans, all the polls indicate you may not support Obamacare, but even if you don't support Obamacare, you are opposed to using this political brinkmanship and closing down the government. And that kind of thing is something that I think voters, if they knew Lonergan's position on, would hold them to task on it. But to my mind, Booker has not made that kind of effective case saying, here's what Lonergan has said about this.
Well, that's Bridget Harrison, and she's a professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Joining us along with Tom Moran, editorial page editor and political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. There are two elections in New Jersey in about the next month. First one for the U.S. Senate and then for governor. We're talking about New Jersey politics, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. If you're a voter in New Jersey, have you made up your mind? What are the issues that you care about? 1-888-477-9499. You can also email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Wheaton Arts in Millville, New Jersey, presents the Festival of Fine Craft, Saturday and Sunday, October 5th and 6th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days. 130 juried artists and more. Details online at wheatonarts.org.
I'm Jesse Thorne. On the next Bullseye, I talk to writer Juno Diaz.
And I always think that my writing is an attempt for me to understand what immigration makes explicit. And all of us have to figure out ways to stitch together multiple worlds into some semblance of a whole.
Juno Diaz on his book, This Is How You Lose Her, on the next Bullseye from NPR.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, Alfonso Cuarón's film Gravity opens tomorrow. We will talk about the impact that Mexican filmmakers are having in Hollywood.
The way they set up certain shots with oblique shots and close-ups and just really frenetic pacing break this linear narrative that Hollywood tends to go by.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY and is proud to announce that Chester County Hospital is now part of Penn Medicine, extending the resources and knowledge of the Academic Medical Center to Chester County. To learn more, chestercountyhospital.org/penn.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. We're talking about New Jersey politics in this hour of Radio Times, talking with Tom Moran of the Newark Star-Ledger and Bridget Harrison from Montclair State University. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We want to hear from our New Jersey listeners. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. In fact, I have an email here from JB saying, I am an independent who resides in Gloucester County. Because of what's going on in Washington, I'm seriously considering voting the entire Democratic ticket, except for Christie. I like his pragmatism and willingness to stand up to the extreme wing of his party. Let me use this as a jumping off point. And Bridget, I'll go back to you. And Christie is interesting in New Jersey in that he's a Republican, essentially a Republican governor in a very blue state.
He is interesting in that regard, and I think that one of the most interesting parts of that story is that not only is he a Republican governor in a blue state, but he is also a Republican governor in a blue state that is parlaying that into a national profile and has succeeded at this point astoundingly. He has been able to walk that very fine line between placating the conservative wing of the Republican Party nationally, but also keeping his constituents at home, who tend to be a bit more liberal, happy as well. It has been a fascinating tightrope walk to watch.
And because he's, what, a skilled politician, able to sort of navigate these polls?
He is a skilled politician. He has enormously effective communication skills, whether you agree or disagree with kind of the style in which he delivers things. His message winds up being enormously appealing to a pretty large segment of the voters. And he's able to actually pick policy, in my view, that kind of stands up to the test of what New Jerseyans want, but then every once in a while, examples might include things like vetoing preventative health care money that goes to Planned Parenthood clinics, or eliminating the ARC tunnel that would connect New Jersey with Manhattan. These kind of things that we would think would enormously irritate New Jersey voters, he does them, you know, manages to get national headlines out of them, and endears himself to those conservatives nationally.
Well, Tom, we were talking about Cory Booker style and substance, and here we are, Chris Christie style and substance.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the best politician I've ever seen, flat out. A talented politician, like maybe since Bill Clinton. I mean, it's remarkable, not just in how good he is at communicating, but at the way he slices every one of these political debates, where he positions himself. Personally, I think he's way overrated, the most overrated governor on the actual accomplishments. But take the shutdown, the politics of it. He said, I've seen it in the national press, that Christie is one of these who's opposed to the shutdown. So he sounds like, oh, here's a guy who's telling his party to sort of settle down. But he's not. He says he's opposed to the shutdown, and then he blames Obama for not having the leadership to bring both sides together. So it's very clever. He feeds the moderate side, and he also is careful to, you know, blame it on Obama, which the right likes. Gay marriage. There's another one, if I can, Marty.
Sure.
He's opposed to gay marriage. New Jerseyans are like 2-1 in favor of gay marriage. So what does he do? He says, I'm opposed to it until we have a referendum. Let's let the people decide. Now, you think of putting the idea of, let's say the issue was whether blacks and whites can marry. You know, the Supreme Court ruled on that in 1967. But imagine saying, well, let's leave that up to a referendum. If most people say no, then we won't let blacks and whites marry. I mean, it's outrageous, really, to put that kind of basic right on the ballot. But it works. I mean, I've talked to liberal people in New Jersey all the time who say, I'm for gay marriage, but it seems fair enough to me to put it on the ballot. So he's, again, just clever as hell when it comes to politics.
And still pretty popular in New Jersey, is he not, Tom?
Extremely popular, yeah. I mean, right now, he's up 20 points in the poll, and he's been up 20 points for a while. And the Monmouth poll, recent one, said 83% of people have made up their minds. So if every one of the 17 who hasn't made up his mind votes for Barbara Bono, she still loses. I mean, I think this thing is over, sadly.
You think it's over, sadly?
Because sadly in the sense that we have not had a discussion of the issues in New Jersey or the gigantic challenges that the next governor, whoever it is going to face. We haven't even talked about that.
Well, let's talk about it. Let me toss this back to you, Bridget, and talk a bit about Barbara Buono. She's a state senator. She is challenging Chris Christie. She certainly has an uphill battle. Do you think she has been or is the right candidate to challenge him?
I don't know that there is a right candidate, but I think that and believe me, I respect the heck out of Barbara Buono. I think that she has been one of the most consistent and loyal voices of opposition to the Christie administration in the state legislature. She clearly has, you know, experience and expertise. The problem, however, has been that her campaign from the get-go has been both flawed, but also has had a stranglehold placed on it by the enormous power of the Christie administration and his campaign. And so even the kind of mundane Democratic political party grassroots support that she should be able to take for granted and should have had in her back pocket in March, she's still out there trying to get that, and in many cases she has not succeeded. 36 Democratic elected officials have endorsed her opponent. And it's not because she's too ideologically extreme, or it's not because she's inexperienced. It's because Chris Christie has this kind of magical aura that has converted people into his camp. So she's faced an enormously difficult task in terms of generating partisan support, in terms of generating financial dollars for her campaign. And, you know, your question is, was she the wrong candidate? I don't know who the right candidate would have been. I think that even someone like Cory Booker may have had a very difficult task in campaigning against this enormous political force that is Chris Christie.
But do you think political leaders fear Chris Christie?
I think that they partially fear him, but I also think that he is very politically expedient, and he has made his political deals from the beginning of his career with the Democratic bosses, and this has been a very kind of symbiotic relationship for them and for him. Hmm. And so, you know, if you're getting what you want from the Republican governor, why switch sides? And I think that, you know, those bosses have been you know, kowtowed to enough by the Christie administration that they're relatively satisfied. And the reality is that Christie doesn't want to do a whole lot to alienate the Democrats in the legislature, because if he's to go national, he needs to have that mantle of bipartisanship that is so appealing to so many voters, particularly in today's political climate.
What do you think, Tom? Then we'll get back to our call.
Well, I don't think she's the best candidate. You know, she got it by default because the bigger names and the more viable candidates chickened out, basically. These decisions were made, like, in the wake of Sandy, right when Christie's popularity was at its peak. But I think if you had a Cory Booker or Dick Cody or a maybe Congressman Rob Andrews who had decided to make a run at this, it would not be a 20-point race. Christie would probably still be ahead, but it would be within striking distance. I mean, Barbara is a principled person. A lot of people like her, but nobody regards her as the strongest figure in the party.
And
I think it's fair to say she's kind of had a mushy message. She doesn't have enough money to send it out, but it's sort of a mushy laundry list that hasn't changed, even though she's been losing consistently. You know, Christie's to blame for the jobs problem, property taxes, minimum wage, gay marriage, she emphasizes Planned Parenthood. But she hasn't really put forward a credible plan of her own to solve the property tax problem or to create jobs. So it doesn't seem compelling. And then she's got no money to put it out.
And I know, because we've done so many shows about New Jersey property taxes, Tom, still sort of front and center when it comes to what New Jersey people complain about.
Yeah, I mean, this is when I said Christie is overrated. The property tax burden for the average family in New Jersey, that's average income and the average value house, has increased 19% since he took office. I mean, this is the biggest problem in this state by far, and he's blown it. Somehow he gets away with it.
And that's Tom Moran. He's editorial page editor, political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger, joining us along with Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University, teaches courses on American politics. We are talking about New Jersey politics and the upcoming races, some of the issues at stake, some of the candidates as well, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499 and reading emails at radiotimes@whyy.org. In fact, we have an email from Aaron from Lambertville. He says he hasn't made up his mind, but he thinks Booker doesn't represent New Jersey, and Lonergan toes the party line. What do they think? Meaning, what do you, you Tom, and you, Bridget, think? Is that an interesting analysis, which is that perhaps Cory Booker not representing New Jersey and Lonergan just too extreme?
Should I go?
Yes, I'm sorry, Tom. Yes, go ahead. And sorry. Then you, Bridget.
I don't think Booker is out of step with New Jersey on most issues. I mean, he has been, despite being, talking about child poverty and minimum wage and being a high-profile liberal, he's taken some fairly conservative positions over the years. He's made common cause with Christie on critical issues, like Christie's biggest accomplishment, pension and bond reform, pension and health care reform. Booker was one of his big allies. Same thing on tenure reform, which is probably the governor's second biggest accomplishment. Booker was a steady ally. So I don't see him as somebody who's out of touch on the left-wing fringe. You know, as I said, he cut the city workforce by 25%. He's a realistic liberal. Lonergan, as I said, I do think is way out of touch.
Mm. What do you think, Bridget?
I agree. I think that Lonergan really has been had his political career based on the rather extremist politics of the right. He has spent most of his past political life, including in 2005 and 2009, trying to push the Republican gubernatorial candidates to the right in primaries. And, you know, many of the remarks that he has made have proven embarrassing both to himself and his campaign, but also to the Republican Party and to the Tea Party, of which he, participates. In terms of Booker, he is, in many ways, I think of him as kind of almost like a Bill Clinton-esque politician in terms of ideology, or a John Corzine. There is this grounding in liberalism. There is no doubt that he comes from a more traditional liberal model. But like Tom said, when it comes to things like school choice, particularly when it comes to issues that impact urban constituents, he tends to be a bit more conservative, including things like tenure reform, like charter schools. And I think that those positions render him a bit more in touch, particularly with urban constituencies in the state. I also think that his kind of embracing of the corporate sector, you know, whether that's Wall Street or Silicon Valley or whatever, is endemic of a kind of new ideology where liberals have to recognize that the corporate world plays a very important part in economic development and prosperity.
Let me get, looks like Kate from Galloway, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. And Kate, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
First, I want to say that I agree that Christie is tremendously overrated, and I worry that the national impression of him is too positive. My question is for your guest.
Sure.
My impression is that he has held on to the money that came in for Sandy, both the federal money that we received and the donations that the organization he set up received. It seems like he just held on to that, sat on that money, and my cynical impression is that he was holding on to that so that he could dole it out right before the election, to make himself a hero and give people a positive impression of him right before the election. It seems that there's too many people who have not yet recovered a whole year later.
Well, Kate, let me find out if your hunch is right or not, and Tom, if I can toss that to you.
Well, we are seeing more and more reports of people expressing frustration that they haven't gotten the help either from the insurers or the government programs. And they're still in a real fix this long after the storm. But I haven't seen any evidence that Christie is withholding aid or doing anything deliberately. And I'd be surprised. That's a little too dastardly. I would be surprised by it.
And what about for you, Bridget?
Well, I'm not sure about the federal money. I mean, I don't know. I know that I actually am from Galloway. And
are? Okay.
Yeah, many of us were affected by the storm. And I think that for those individuals who suffered damage, the process is directly with the federal government and FEMA. There are state funds, obviously, that are channeled through. I don't know that the governor has created a policy to hold on to those monies. I think that the other private donations are a different story. I do remember, and Tom may know this better than I, hearing reports that there were questions about how to allocate those monies and that that may have forestalled the process. And, you know, I think that in some ways Kate's question is not out of character, because when we think about it, there is a longstanding tradition in New Jersey where those property tax rebate checks would go out a week or two before the election, you know, so that people would be enamored of their incumbent legislators. I don't have any specific information about this being a policy from the Christie administration, but we know that the timing of, you know, those kind of payments to individuals sometimes can be politically motivated.
And Tom, I think it speaks to the frustration, obviously, that some people in New Jersey have about the fact that it's been almost a year since Sandy, you know, blew across the state and people are still struggling.
Yeah, you know, Sandy is interesting with Christie, I think, in that, you know, he hasn't done a great job in dealing with it, but he's made a huge emotional connection with people. And he had moments like the hug of Obama and the scolding of John Boehner when the House Republicans delayed on giving us aid, where, again, brilliant politics, and he knew exactly where to position himself on that fight, and people said, he's fighting for us. I think people in New Jersey have that sense of him. But, you know, we parked our trains in a swamp and caused, you know, tens of millions of dollars worth of damage when New York moved theirs to high ground when the storm was on its way. The plan that Christie submitted to the federal government in dispersal of the aid, they said shortchanged low-income people, and they made him request some changes to help to renters and Spanish speakers. On the refuse removal, I think the jury's still out, but some states had prepared bids to get the cheapest refuge removal. They have standing bids. New Jersey did not, so we were sort of caught flat-footed and had to do a no-bid contract. You know, so I don't think his performance on Sandy has been that great, but his political performance on it has been outstanding. And he's always there. He's down there all the time making his presence known. It's important for morale, and people love him for it.
Well, and Bridget,
Tom, if I can pick up on that.
Yeah,
I think that there's a difference between the, you know, kind of Joe and Jane voter who may be living in, for example, Bergen County versus people who are directly impacted by the storm. And I since much greater levels of frustration, despite the fact that the governor is at the shore communities. They appreciate that he's there, and they appreciate that the media is there. But in my view, much of those actions are taken to remind voters of that pinnacle of his popularity, you know, that Obama embrace. And I don't know that, I think that there are very divergent constituencies there, people who were directly affected by the storm who are angry as hell, both at the state and federal government. And that anger is almost pervasive, and it is directed at politicians of both political parties at municipal, state, and federal levels of government. And then there is the rest of the world who believes that Chris Christie's handling of this disaster, you know, was optimal. And I think that there's a real divergence there.
And Tom, we're almost up in a break here, but going back to that photo op with Christie and Obama, good for Obama a year ago and good for Christie today?
Yep. They're going to stay BFF for a while, I bet.
And we can see that, you know, that really fascinating image, that tall drink of water for president and the chubby governor of New Jersey. Tom Moran, editorial page editor, political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. We are talking about NJ politics in this hour of Radio Times, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We do have some callers waiting in the wings, and you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll read it on the air. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Franklin Institute is committed to inspiring passion for learning about science and technology, and about creating a spark or an aha moment in a child. At the Franklin Institute, kids can be learning while they think they're just having fun. To book a field trip or a visit to the Franklin Institute, the number is 215-448-1200. The website is www.fi.edu. The Franklin Institute supports WHYY.
The new Showtime series, Masters of Sex, is based on the book by Thomas Mayer about Masters and Johnson, the team that conducted controversial research into human sexuality based on observing volunteers engaged in the act.
They conducted their studies with the secrecy of a CIA operation.
Thomas Mayer on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
What's life really like for the uninsured?
It's a frightening experience. It's a frightening thought. We tend to put our health care on the back burner, so to speak.
That's patient Warren Steptoe in a new documentary on healthcare called The Waiting Room. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. New Jersey has a special election for the U.S. Senate in mid-October, and then a few weeks later, an election for governor. Newark Mayor Democrat Cory Booker and Republican Steve Lonegan, former mayor of Bogota, are vying to be the senator replacing the late Frank Lautenberg. Governor Chris Christie is being challenged by State Senator Barbara Buono. It's an off-year election. Are New Jersey voters engaged? Are you? We're talking about all of this, including other political happenings in the Garden State with Tom Moran of the Newark Star-Ledger and Bridget Harrison from Montclair State University. And again, 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Margo from, looks like Medford Lakes, to join us on Radio Times. Margo, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment and kind of ask a question of the folks here on the line, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in Medford Lakes, which is South Jersey, and, you know, I kind of feel like people just will gravitate toward anyone who will go to the mat for them, for their interests, and Christie has done a fantastic job with that. You know, cultivating that persona. He kind of like Putin in Russia. You know, people just seem to really love Putin, even though he's really horrible for them and for their rights and stuff. And, you know, here in South Jersey, we are, the Democratic Party is, it's being held at a stranglehold tight grip by the Norcross political machine. And, you know, there is one instance of true bipartisanship, though, here in South Jersey, and that's with our Pinelands National Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's this pipeline being put through, and we know that Norcross very much wants it, and Christie does too. And it's a horrible thing. And you know, if people really were to look at all of the environmental the ways that Christie has been working behind their backs to really undermine their own, you know, people's own interests, I think they would really think twice about our governor.
Well, let me just stop you there, Margo, because I do need to challenge you on the Putin comparison there. I think that's a bit over the top. But I'd be curious, Tom Moran, I mean, there seems to be a theme here about certainly coming from some of our callers about Chris Christie and the sort of public and private Chris Christie.
Well, first of all, on Putin, you know, he basically lets mobsters murder journalists.
Yeah, exactly.
He has that in common with Christie. He probably wouldn't mind. If he could name the journalist, he hates us.
But he's not going to kill you, Tom.
No, he probably wouldn't.
Okay. Just
the more, if you're going to compare him to dictators, the one I hear more often is Mussolini, for the record. But I think they're both a little unfair, yeah.
I would agree. Agree.
Anyway, his record on the environment is catastrophic. You know, he's been terrible. And he took $1 billion out of green energy funds over the course to help balance his three budgets and to help him keep his pledge that no new taxes. But $1 billion, we have a $30 billion budget roughly in New Jersey. So $1 billion is a lot of money. That would have all gone primarily into conservation efforts, and he grabbed it. So, you know, and a few other things, too, in the environment, including this pipeline that has people concerned going across the Pinelands, including it has people like Governor Byrne, who established the Pinelands, very concerned.
Mm.
So, you know, but yes, his working relationship with people like Norcross and in the North, Joe DiVincenzo and Brian Stack, but Norcross being the biggest one, has been the key to his whole operation. They control the Democratic leadership, and a lot of Christie's big accomplishments, including pension bond, most Democrats opposed him on, but the leadership supported him, and all the Republicans supported him, so we got it done. So that model of hitching his wagon to the bosses in the Democratic Party has been very successful for him.
And if we're talking about the bosses in the Democratic Party, Bridget, we need to talk about George Norcross, yes?
Absolutely. And I think that, unfortunately, for Margot's case and many others, you know, when there are other parallels between when these two enormous political forces, that is Norcross and Christie, ally, there is essentially no stopping them. And, you know, people, for example, who were opposed to the Rutgers-Rowan merger, you know, took to the streets. And it was probably one of the first times that we saw in the Christie administration this kind of massive opposition. In the end, it did not matter. When you have these two political forces that have such enormous control, in many ways, you're banging your head up against the wall to try and stop them. One of the few mechanisms by which they could be stopped, perhaps, would be court injunctions. But I think that it is very, very difficult to stop this political alliance. It is almost omnipotent in the state of New Jersey.
Wow. Margot, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Susan from Princeton has to say. And Susan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello?
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm calling about Cory Booker and the fact that many of us who support him are doing so because we really believe that the Senate of the United States should not be a white men's club, and there needs to be a great deal more diversity with African Americans and women in that particular political body. So my question is, do you think that people, that African Americans in particular, will respond to the fact that he's running for senator and then come out on October 16th? But by the way that Christie has really manipulated this these election dates, will they come out again to vote for Barbara Buono in November? Because I think that it really puts her again at another disadvantage that she shouldn't really have.
Well, Susan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Tom Moran, is race an issue, do you think, in the U.S. Senate race in New Jersey?
No, I really have heard almost no talk about that, which is kind of a nice thing, isn't it? I mean, maybe that 10 years ago would have definitely been a high-profile aspect of this race, but I don't think it is. Do you, Bridget?
Yeah, do you, Bridget?
Well, I don't think it is yet, and I don't think it is in the mainstream, but I think that the reality is that with so few African Americans having served in the Senate, there is, for people who that issue matters to, whether they're black or white is irrelevant, but for people who that is an important issue, the diversity thing is very, very important and maybe salient enough to drive people to the polls. It is my belief that coming closer to Election Day, we will see some very targeted social media and some very targeted advertising reminding voters, particularly voters in cities, of, you know, the kind of historic nature of Booker's election. And yes, Tom, I guess it is nice if you're not talking about diversity because equality has been achieved. But if you look at the U.S. Senate, to not talk about diversity seems to be ignoring a very large portion of what is going on. And so I think that for some people that is enormously important. It does matter. Now, to the question as to whether Booker's presence on the ballot and the status of this election is going to hurt Barbara Buono's chances, I mean, I would agree with what Tom said earlier. I think that this race is almost effectively over. Mm-hmm. And I think that people will be motivated to come out for Booker if they believe in his candidacy. We don't know who those voters are right now because we haven't had a special election like this. But I do believe that for those people who recognize that Barbara Buono's campaign is on the losing side, that may, in effect, tamp down the vote. And so, you know, that would obviously increase Christie's lead.
Susan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, talking New Jersey politics and two upcoming elections, one in mid-October for the U.S. Senate and one in early November for governor. And taking calls, as I said, at 1-888-477-9499. We want to know what you make of the races in New Jersey, the candidates, the issues. Do give us a call. Tom, let me go back to you. And actually, a question I had talking about Cory Booker's friends in high places. Back in 2010, Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder, gave Newark School something like $100 million. So that was about 3 years ago. Is there any way of knowing how, if that money has been spent, how it's been spent, whether it's helped the schools in Newark?
Yeah, they publish, it's all very transparent. They publish what the grants go towards, and it's been a variety of things. The criticism of it has been sort of a shell, such a wide variety of things that has been around one central strategy. Their biggest investment was to help finance the Newark teachers contract, which really broke new ground. It establishes merit pay, and they handed out their first bonuses this year to, I think it was something like 5% of the teachers in Newark who were able to demonstrate they helped their kids got bonuses. But they've done a bunch of other things, like allowing schools to undertake a bunch of experiments, like a longer school day, and like a lot of advanced technology in the classroom. It's been all over the map. But I don't think there's any question that it's helped. And it was $100 million. It came with a match for another $100 million. I mean, $100 million, I'm sorry, you can only claim if you raise your own $100
million. Oh, I got you.
So the total's $200 million. They're almost there.
And they're almost there. Well, that's pretty good. Bridget, let me go back to you, something that Tom raised earlier, and this is Judge Mary Jacobson recently ordering New Jersey to allow gay couples to marry in the state, essentially saying the civil unions were not enough. Now, the Christie administration has appealed this, and as Tom was saying, Christie wanted to put this before the voters. Where do you think this issue stands today?
Well, I think that, we're looming at October 21st, at the date at which gay marriage would become legal under Mary Jacobson's ruling in the state of New Jersey. Thus far, to my knowledge, there has been no stay. I think that this is one of the key examples of the divergence of Governor Christie's ability to placate New Jersey voters and that conservative national constituency. I think that had this ruling not occurred, he would have been better able to get away with, his kind of more populist notion, let the people decide. I think that this has put him in a very tough position because he is staking a perhaps stronger claim than he would have wanted against gay marriage right before his own gubernatorial election.
But as you said, Tom, I mean, you can argue whether it would be the right thing to do to put it to the voters, but it looks like if it were put to the voters, it there's a good chance it would pass.
It would. I really doubt it's going to get to that point, Marty, because there are two other ways they're trying. First is the court case, and that to me looks like pretty much a slam dunk. The logic of this judge's ruling seemed inescapable to me. Because what you have is a 2006 state Supreme Court ruling saying gay couples should have full legal equality. Mm-hmm. And you can call it marriage or call it civil union, whatever, but they said you have to have full legal equality. Now the federal government has decided to treat gay married couples equally. There's no way you can make the equal treatment under the law argument. A gay civil union couple in New Jersey doesn't get Social Security, doesn't get tax benefits, doesn't get a host of federal benefits because of the state law calling them just a civil union. So the judge said, look, the Supreme Court said equal rights, the only way to do that is to make it marriage. So that's one route. The other attempt that's underway is to override the governor's veto. And that's going to be an uphill fight, but there's a lot of money and a national coalition of groups that is really putting effort into getting people to call your legislator. The real battle there is, are there enough Republicans with the moxie to defy the governor? Because if you talk to them off the record, and the gay rights groups say they've gotten commitments from people that are telling them, I'm for it, I just don't want to defy the big guy because he'll kill me.
Oh, wow.
So if the override doesn't work and the court case doesn't work, then they probably would go to referendum as the last resort. And I would light my hair on fire if it didn't pass in New Jersey. Mm.
And we should say kill me is a metaphor because we don't want to do that Putin-Christie thing.
Then. Thank you, Marty.
Okay, I just want to make sure because I get in trouble when stuff like that goes out on the air. Let me see what Miles from, looks like Elmer, New Jersey, has to say. Go ahead, Miles, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I have a question. Christie's approval ratings are in the mid to upper 60s. Yet you take a look at the other numbers, unemployment compared to neighboring states, unemployment compared to Alabama or Louisiana, the rate's higher, job creation's lower. What gives?
Well, this has been the issue that we've been batting around for this hour. Bridget, what do you say back to Miles?
Well, I think that, Miles, what we have here is a master politician who is able to spin even the most dire accomplishments in a favorable light. And most politicians do this. I think that Chris Christie is particularly effective at doing it. And when he does have policy success, He doesn't let anyone forget about it. I mean, in the governor's defense, I would say, you know, in this economic climate, it is a tough road to hoe. Part of the economy is suffering because of the residual damage of Sandy. But when you look at those comparisons, like you say, with neighboring states, there is clearly something wrong. There is clearly something that the governor has not done. And his opponent has not been able to make that message stick. And I think that that reality, on the one hand, and people's perception on the other, clearly diverge, and they're willing to kind of forgive him the increases in property taxes or the high unemployment rate. And part of that is the appeal of his style rather than the substance.
Tom, we're almost out of time here, about a minute or so to go, but since New Jersey is so much in the national press now, what does the national press not understand about New Jersey and perhaps even not understand about its governor?
Well, I think what they don't understand is that he hasn't got that much accomplished. The state's credit rating is dropping. I mentioned the unemployment, the property tax problem. Things like the transportation system in New Jersey is bankrupt. And basically, he's been living on money that Corzine set aside to build that Hudson River Tunnel that he canceled. There are a lot of things that are kind of come home to roost, and I don't think people have any idea about that. I think the other thing about Christie is the bipartisan thing is a little overrated because it's based on his relationship with the boss, and they've kind of run out of big-ticket items. The pension and health and the tenure reform were their big accomplishments, along with the reorganization of higher ed. But when I talk to both sides now, it's like, what is the next big bipartisan thing? It's small potatoes. So you have bitter standoffs over the Supreme Court, over gay marriage, over minimum wage. So I think that it's going to be more partisan fights and less bipartisan cooperation than it's made out. He plays that up because it's such a good counterpart for the national audience to the Tea Party and the Ted Cruzes.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Tom Moran, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And Bridget Harrison, thank you very much as well.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. And Bridget Harrison, a professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Tom Moran, editorial page editor and political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger, talking about New Jersey politics and two upcoming elections. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about this program. You can also find out about my Twitter account. Stay with us. Hour 2 coming up next.